Chevy Equinox with forward collision alert, automatic emergency braking, and available all-wheel drive. It's my ultimate mobile device. Go to ChevyDriveChicago.com to schedule a test drive. Chevy Equinox. It's your choice. Own it.
Okay, ready to turn those mics on? Thank you, Reggie. Yeah, I know. This one's going to be a little weird. Yeah, this a lot has happened in the last time since we spoke on this podcast, hasn't it? So let's see if we can do what we're supposed to here. All right. I see the needles are jumping, waiting some pearls of wisdom. I hope I can deliver them. We'll see what happens. Mike is hot. Talent is hotter. All right, I'll give you my three S's right down in the book. This is episode 211, and I'll say star, smile strong, and then I will count it down, and we will get started. You all set on your end? Okay, let's do this thing. 3, 2, 1. Hey, it's Elton Jim Toronto, and this is Captain Podtastic. And welcome to another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Every Monday, a new episode of this podcast is posted at WGNradio.com or wherever you find and download your favorite podcast. Whatever platform that is, don't forget to subscribe to it, rate this podcast, and most importantly, tell your friends, send them a link, send them a message, send them good tidings, and send them the word that your favorite podcast is Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, and why the heck isn't it theirs? Your word of mouth is better than any advertising or marketing that I can do. And your loyalty and devotion is much appreciated. And once again, thank you so much to those who do send encouraging and sometimes negative, which is fine, messages on my Facebook page for this podcast. I don't care why you listen. Maybe you hate me so much you can't wait to hear what I'm going to say next. Or maybe you enjoy what's going on here. Whatever reason you listen, it's much appreciated, and your loyalty and your devotion is certainly something that I take much pride and thanks in. So thank you for coming here on a weekly basis. We are listening to episode 211, and if you are a newcomer to the podcast, or if you've been around since day one, which now is 4 years ago, we started this podcast back in May of 2016. If you've been around from the beginning, or you've found us somewhere along the line, and you'd like to hear something in the past, don't forget, at WGNradio.com, you go to the podcast section, and you see the prompt for this podcast. Not only is the most recent podcast there, but every podcast that I've done, all previous 210, are there for your listening pleasure. So feel free to scan the archives and see what the heck I've been doing for the last 4 years. And as I say on several occasions, sometimes it's good to sort of get caught up on this if you are a regular listener and you're new to the game, or even if you're old to the game and you just want to binge again. I know my wife and I recently, for the second time, watched the entire series of Breaking Bad. We'd seen it, but we started from episode one, and over several weekends, we finished all five seasons. And it was fun to revisit them, and there were some moments and some there were some images that were very memorable, and saying, oh, I remember this part. And then there were some parts I said, did we even see this show? When did that happen? So even though you're a diehard fan of anything, it always helps to go back and and brush up a little. And as and I also say that I will frequently refer back to previous podcasts, because at the end of the day, this is hopefully a dialogue between me and you, the listener. There hopefully are more than just you listening to me individually now, but certainly I try to make it as personalized in terms of that we are talking one-on-one, even though hopefully we're talking to a wide universe. But it is a dialogue. At least that's the way I hope it comes off. And so every so often, you know, when you get into a conversation with somebody, if you've got a history with them, they may refer back to something they said many times or several in the past, 2 months ago, 2 years ago. So it doesn't hurt, especially if you've got some free time on your hands. Hey, it's free, right? WGNradio.com, under the podcast sections, Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. In fact, I will be referring to something today from a previous podcast, actually a podcast almost at the beginning, certainly within the first year of this podcast, back in 2016. So there you go. Perfect example. After you hear this, you might want to go back and see what I said there. And hopefully what I said there jives and is consistent. Because, you know, at the end of the day, I think, you know, my goal is always, as a person, we're all hypocrites, right? We all say things and sometimes do other things. So the goal is to cut down on as much hypocrisy in your life as you can. That's what I think. It's inevitable that it may creep in. But the goal is to always stay true to yourself. And there's nothing wrong with growing and changing. So you don't have to, what you said 40 years ago or 20 years ago or 5 minutes ago necessarily, doesn't mean that that is etched in stone. Hopefully we are always learning, always changing, always evolving, or at the very least, we are at least reaffirming through our own education, taking in more information on a regular basis that either validates our original thought, or perhaps it begins to open some cracks in our original opinion and say, well, maybe it's time for me to rethink that. Nothing wrong with that. That's not hypocrisy. If you state as to why your opinion changed, then that's not hypocrisy. That's growing. That's learning. But it doesn't mean that you have to change, and it doesn't mean maybe what you've said you still believe, and you've done all the research, and you know what? You still say, I still believe that to be true. Nothing wrong with that. That's your right. But don't be afraid to seek out or at least listen to new information and weigh that with the old information that you had in order to make an opinion, which is either an old opinion that is just more validated, as I said before, or perhaps you start to say, maybe I was wrong. I bring that up because, wow, what a week. Since we last spoke on this podcast, a lot has changed. And boy, 2020 will go down as quite a year of rapid, almost overnight change. And we have been talking about a new normal over the last couple of months due to the COVID lockdown and what will be the new normal. And now we have a newer normal, or at least a consideration of an even newer normal thrust upon us. You know, on a weekly basis, I try to come up with fun and entertaining and informative topics to talk about, and it's my goal to entertain you and to hopefully make you laugh. And sometimes I get serious as well, right? That's all part of who we are. We're not always jokesters. And I have to admit that in sitting down here today, it's not easy to come up with kind of funny things to talk about or share with you, and it almost would seem frivolous to do so. And I've certainly got a few topics that I planned on talking about, and I will talk about those, but it seems to me that right in the heart of this, even though, yes, I understand that in some ways a podcast like this can be viewed, and I certainly would hope that at times it does provide a distraction, or it does provide a safe haven, or it does provide some kind of an escape from the daily poundings of what the world seems to be giving us today. But this recent development is so serious and so just chaotic that to not address it, I think, would be irresponsible. I usually do not get political, and I'm not going to get political. I mentioned, I believe, on the last podcast or a couple of before that in my, I guess, training, if you will, as a journalist initially in my career, I was trained to look at the middle ground, the gray side, to be subjective as much as possible, to not favor one side or the other, but in many cases play devil's advocate, ask that hard question, ask or bring up a hypothetical or a scenario in which perhaps makes us think about both sides of an argument. God knows that in today's world, and even in today's media, sadly, the idea of objectivity versus subjectivity has really been blurred. Subjective is your opinion. Objective is as factual as can be. I've always tried to be objective in the middle. I hope I didn't say subjective earlier now that I'm thinking about it. I always want to be objective. There's enough subjective out there. Today, it seems as if it's almost what the media is paid to do. There have been so many personalities that have put forth their own opinions that even when they are delivering supposedly the news in an objective manner, it is offered with lots of opinions. And I certainly have my own opinions, but I also feel that it's not really my place, unless I was some big political zealot here, and the point of this podcast was to either put forth my political views or defend or promote some agenda. But that's not the case. I try to be as objective as possible. And state things which are my opinion, but in a way that hopefully makes you think on both sides. And that's what I plan to try to do today. The incident involving George Floyd in Minneapolis a week or so ago, where he was killed by a police officer applying pressure to his neck by kneeling on him and killed him in under 9 minutes, just created a firestorm in this country that we are still reeling from on a daily basis. I'm recording this a few days before it posts, and even though things seems to have simmered down than they were 3 or 4 days ago, when the rioting and the protesting and especially the violence and the looting was taking place all around the country every night in not only big cities but also in suburban areas. There was a lot of anger, a lot of rage, and a lot of violence, and a lot of criminal activity, and I think we need to call that out for what it was. A distinction has been made early on when it seemed as if it was just lawlessness going on, random violence, but sadly organized violence as well by criminals taking advantage of the fact that we either did not have the police manpower to blanket an entire huge metropolis, or there was a reluctance to show police authority in the midst of an issue, an incident that involved police authority. So it was a perfect storm, and those people who were looking to perpetrate criminal acts certainly took advantage of it. The media was calling them opportunists. I think that's a little easy. They were criminals. The people that were looting were not protesting the murder and the alleged murder, we have to say, but the killing and the injustice that was perpetrated in the George Floyd incident. Those people that were breaking windows and casually walking into stores as if it was, Christmas Eve shopping. There wasn't a hint of embarrassment. There wasn't a hint of trying to be covert. There wasn't a hint of guilt that they were doing this. People were just walking into broken windows and walking out with bags and carts filled with merchandise. That was not protesting. That was stealing. That was robbing. And all those people that did it were criminals. You cannot justify that. The protesters, those that were in the streets, getting their message out peacefully, marching, holding sit-ins, that's protesting. Nobody's complaining about that and people's right to do that. That's a part of our Constitution and our history and our freedoms. But the other side of what was going on really should not be soft-soaped and should not be whitewashed, because those were criminals, and that was criminal behavior. And it was a very ugly scene. And the world is watching and has been watching, and that is part of the American experience and the American, as they say so often, the American experiment. You know, this kind of behavior goes on in other countries. There are riots. There is looting. There is lawlessness at times based on events. This is not unique to America. What is unique about this is that America is willing to show the world, to not have an information blackout or pretend or deny that it ever happened. So that's why it's so wrenching to watch this on our television screens, and hopefully, or even for those of you who have experienced it firsthand, it's frightening, it's scary, it's disturbing. In any way, whether you are watching it from afar or experiencing it down your street. But at the same time, that is part of who we are, and that is part of our society. We will exalt in our achievements, and we will show them off as much as we can with great pride. But at the same time, I believe to our credit, we will also show our flaws for the world to see. And it comes with the territory. So keep that in mind if you're feeling sad or you're feeling depressed or you're wondering what is going on with our country And how is this happening to us? And those are legitimate concerns. But also don't forget that they're not unique to this country. They're not unique to Americans. This goes on all around the world every day. What we should be proud of to some extent, we shouldn't be proud that this mayhem is happening, but we should be proud of is that we have the guts, we have the bravery to let it be seen and to ultimately have to confront it and hopefully try to change it. And that's what a lot of other countries do not have. They do not have that courage and that freedom to do that. So horrible, horrible behavior happening in this country. But also the fact that we're allowing it to be seen, allowing it to be broadcast around the world. And we have to take our knocks because of it. But that is also something that we as a country should be proud of. That we are not afraid to show our flaws. We are a great country, but we are a human country. And I've said this many times, the human species is a flawed species. And so we can never expect to be perfect. But at least we do show the world both sides of our humanity. When we achieve, as well as when we fall short, and sometimes we fall very short. And that's what's sort of happening right now. Hopefully this will, the rioting and the lawlessness will come to an end. That's what's scary about it. On a nightly or daily basis, we don't know when it may erupt again. The protests are fine. The protests need to be there. There is clearly a problem in our country. It has been festering for decades, if not centuries. We have attempted to address it in many ways, many times over the years. And clearly, we have not been successful. And clearly, we have not done what needs to be done. And perhaps this time there will be a stronger commitment to do more than talk about changing things. We have always heard a lot of rhetoric about justice and equality and change, but it doesn't seem as if we are ultimately committed to it. And hopefully, this time, there will be more than just rhetoric and speeches and marches and vigils. Those may offer temporary solace. They may offer temporary types of feeling that something's good and we're on a positive road. But at the end of the day, as we've seen, all the speeches and all the rhetoric and all the hope and all things like that really don't make things better. We have to make things better by our actions. And I have to say that, and this might be controversial, but I'll say it anyway because I believe it's true. I think every president, perhaps Abraham Lincoln is the only one of the 45 presidents that we have had currently. I think every president, perhaps Abraham Lincoln excepted, must take some blame for this. I mean, don't forget, we all know that this stems from, as many have called it, America's original sin. The deep racial divides in this country date back to slavery. And we also have to understand that slavery was a part of our birth. This country, you know, we, as I said earlier, we're not perfect. We are greatly flawed, and in many ways, we are a contradiction. And maybe we are hypocrites in some way. I mean, don't forget that in the Constitution and in the Declaration of Independence, we talked about freedoms, we talked about revolutions, and we talked about ultimately all men are created equal. And then written within those documents, there was a contradiction. There was slavery. Our founding fathers, who we often put up on pedestals as the great people of insight and foresight, who helped create the principles of which this country was founded on, we know that many of them were slave owners. That when the founding fathers were creating the Constitution, there was great discussion about slavery and how it would be handled within this broader theme of inalienable rights, which mean rights from God, and this idea of all men are created equal. Those are iconic words. We quote them, we chisel them in stone, we exalt them as the foundings of our country, and yet when they were written, they didn't hold true. When they were written, they were a hypocrisy. So we've had racism and we've had prejudice, racial prejudice in this country, not in the last 50 years, not in the last 100 years, but right from the beginning, before we even were officially a country. So we have to acknowledge that and understand that this is not just a problem of the last 50 years or the last 10 years. This has been something that has weighed on us even from before we were an official country. It's in our history. It's in our DNA, sadly. And it was done for economic reasons, which ironically, in this whole COVID shutdown, we've been, before the George Floyd incident, we were weighing the merits of opening our society after this COVID infection to what do we do here? How long do we shut down? How long do we give precedence to this infection over our economy? And we were struggling with that as different states were opening and letting people congregate and opening restaurants and loosening the shutdown and the guidelines. And many people, of course, were taking advantage of that and getting into big groups and not social distancing and not wearing masks. We were already struggling with this idea of commerce versus humanity, right? That's basically what the argument, or not so much the argument, but the push and pull was in terms of the COVID shutdown and the growing protest against it. What is amazing is how we were already divided and in the midst of a conflict in this country between the shutdown and the loosening up of the of our society over the last couple of months, and then gasoline. gallons of it were thrown on it on an age-old battle between humanity and economics and justice. So, as I said, it's hard to sit here today and not somehow address this. Not here to make you sad, not here to make you happy, but maybe today here to make you think. But that's where we stand today. I don't think the irony of the protests here is unlike in the past, and we've had many incidents of this in the recent past as well as centuries old. We've had incidents where African Americans have been killed by authority figures, by police, or even by angry mobs, right? We had the lynchings in the early 20th century. As, 30 years ago almost? There's some people that may not even remember, may not even have been born. But don't forget, in 1992, we had a very similar situation with Rodney King. I'm not hearing Rodney King's name mentioned very much. And I'm surprised by that, because it's the recent future. Many of the same calls for justice and change and equality and better relationships between the African American community and the police departments in all cities, not just major metropolises, but in all cities, the same calls, the same arguments, the same pleas were made back then. If you don't remember the Rodney King incident in 1991, Rodney King was pulled over for a traffic infraction in Los Angeles. Admittedly, I believe he was drunk, but at the same time, he was brutally beaten by LA police officers. And don't forget, this is 1991. This is before social media. This is before mobile phones with cameras. There was one person, for whatever reason, from his balcony, who saw this occurring on the street below, and at that time pulled out something that we used to call a camcorder, if you remember that name, and started to film this brutal beating, which involved at least four Los Angeles policemen and an amazing display of just violence against him. He was unarmed. He was unable to protect himself. And the Rodney King beating is still difficult to watch 30 years later. And after that happened, the call came out when this became a major story, obviously. And the cries for better relationships between the African-American community and the police, a revamp of police procedure in terms of how to approach or how to subdue a potential suspect. Later in 1992, the event happened in 91, but then in 92, when the police officers were acquitted, they were white, let's not forget, who beat Rodney King. When the white police officers were acquitted, there were riots throughout the country, certainly in Los Angeles, and they were devastating. And I'm sure you can go on Google or find the LA riots of 1992. The pictures, I'm sure, I haven't looked at them, but I know from memory that the pictures looked very similar. The outrage, the anger, the protests, and the lawlessness, and the violence, and the criminal activity. was the same. And in fact, if you read about it, you will discover that while today we are debating how to stop or deal with this lawlessness, at that time in 1992, the National Guard was brought into Los Angeles. The United States Army was brought into Los Angeles to help quell the riots and the looting. So the solutions to stop this lawlessness, this breakdown of law and order in our country in the wake of this horrible incident, what's being talked about today is not completely out of the realm. It's been used before. We need to remember our history. But sadly, as I said, that was almost 30 years ago, and here we are today. It's almost identical. The circumstances are somewhat different in terms of the details, but the end result is almost identical. So sadly, we can look back and say, at the end of the day, even though there were calls for change and there were supposed changes made, 30 years later, we haven't moved an inch. And if anything, we've moved back five steps. That you can validate that. As I said, look it up on the internet. Rodney King, 1991, 1992. Remember 20 years ago in New York City, there was a young black man who was shot by New York police 41 times. He was hit. They fired 41 shots. They hit him 19 times and killed him. Police misidentified him as a rape suspect. They thought that he was armed. It turned out he was unarmed. He was reaching for his wallet. He was not reaching for a gun. And he was killed. And there was calls for change in police procedure. And once again, those policemen, four policemen in New York, were brought to trial and they were acquitted in that they used reasonable force given the situation. Whether these verdicts were correct, once again, it's hard to tell. But what happened in the George Floyd incident just 10 days or 2 weeks ago is not new. So, yes, we do need changes. I hope, though, that we don't just give them lip service. Because as I've said, I believe not only every president who has run this country and who has known about the prejudice and the deep-seated racism in this country, and as many of them have taken efforts, Lyndon Johnson, for instance, in the 60s, passed the Civil Rights Act, which helped stamp out great amounts of segregation in this country, which was only like 50 years ago. That's the sad part in this country, is even though slavery and racial prejudice and institutionalized racism may be in our DNA at the birth of our country, it was allowed to remain, if not on the books, certainly in actuality. And as I've said, we had a civil war based on the end of slavery and trying to change. We have changed. We have tried to change, and change has happened. It hasn't happened in any great way, unfortunately. But I think we also must, as much as you as people may feel that America is a place that is always hated African Americans, I believe that's unfair too. I think if we look at historically, I think America has done, as I said, what many countries have not done. We have admitted our mistake. We have tried to do better, to improve. We have spent millions and billions and trillions of dollars on different programs, on education, on things like affirmative action. As I said in the 60s, the Civil Rights Act. We had a civil war over it. 600,000 people died fighting. So America has not put a blind eye to its prejudice and its racism. But at the same time, I don't know if it's really tried to make lasting progress. We've thrown money at the problem. We've thrown rhetoric at the problem. We've thrown, marches and speeches and vigils at the problem. But I don't know if we've really, really put our best foot forward to solve the problem, to create a society that is more equal, that is fair, and does provide justice for all. Once again, a phrase that all of us Americans certainly have heard. We have to decide whether it's just a bunch of words or if it's something that we live by. I've said on many occasions here that you have to be realistic if you want to solve a problem. You have to get to the root of the problem, as ugly as it may be, in order to solve it. Talk to any doctor. I've used this analogy in the past. Talk to any doctor. The only way that you're going to cure a tumor is to first acknowledge to the patient that they have it, and that it's serious, and that it needs attention. You can't will it away. You can't pray it away. You can't talk about it going away. You have to make it go away. You have to take steps, real steps, in order for it to go away. You have to treat it. But before you treat it, you must acknowledge it and recognize it. And I believe, as I said, I gave Abraham Lincoln perhaps a pass because, of course, he was the president during the Civil War. And he was ultimately killed for his role in staying steadfast that we need to abolish slavery, of which that Civil War was about. You can talk, anybody can historically talk about what the Civil War was really about. That's what it was about. It was about ending slavery. Whatever other people want to talk about it, that's what the Civil War was about. And Abraham Lincoln ultimately gave his life for the abolishment of slavery. He was killed after the Civil War, days after the Civil War, by John Wilkes Booth, who was a Southerner and who was upset at Lincoln that the Civil War was won by the North and that slavery would ultimately be abolished. That's why Lincoln was killed. But every other president, has to take some blame for this, because you were sitting in that office. You had so much at your feet there in terms of abilities and powers and options. And even our first African-American president, Barack Obama, must take blame. He was president for 8 years. And once again, as I said about, America has tried. We have not succeeded, clearly, but we have not completely turned our eyes against this. We have tried to get better. We have addressed the problem. We haven't, I don't believe, fully engaged it, fully acknowledged it, and fully decided to treat it and solve it, but we've addressed it. Don't forget, Barack Obama was elected president, and it wasn't just African Americans who were responsible for him becoming president. White people had to vote for Barack Obama. So I'm not giving absolution to whites in this country, but I'm just saying, I think we should have to acknowledge that there has been some feeling that we want to help and change and improve on our relations. But I have to say that even in Barack Obama's situation, while he is certainly an aspirational leader for African Americans, as well he should be, in his 8 years in presidency, and I say this as a Chicago citizen of Chicago, born and raised here, Chicago became his adopted city, his hometown. But during the 8 years that Barack Obama was president, he didn't come to Chicago on a weekly basis and visit African-American neighborhoods that were in distress to provide real help or even aspirational help. When he came to Chicago many times, he shut down the highways and he went to his home in Hyde Park and hung out there for a couple of days. But this is a former community organizer on the south side of Chicago. And now as president, I don't think there was any reason why every weekend in his presidency, Barack Obama should not have been staying at the White House. President is a 7 day a week job. That's the job. You don't get a chance to break. You have enough time after your terms to rest. When you're in there, it's a short period of time. 4 years or 8 years go by very fast. It's a 7 day a week job. You have to tell your family that. You got to tell your friends that. And I'm not just blaming Barack Obama, but I'm saying that even here was the nation's first African-American president, and I don't know how much things changed for the African-American community even in his tenure. I know here in Chicago, the gang problem got worse during that time. I know that he did not visit this city that he adopted as his own on any kind of regular basis to try to even be some kind of a symbol. If it's difficult enough to get something done, at least you could use the power of the presidency and the power of the bully pulpit to go to not even just Chicago, but all around the country and be that aspirational leader as an African American, to give people that kind of hope and change, which he ran on. And I'm not just singling him out. As I said, I believe every president that we've ever had must take blame for this. This has been a long, festering national disgrace. It's been called America's original sin, and that's true. But every president, aside from Lincoln, I think, must take some of the blame. And I'll even take it a step further. I think that if we really are serious this time, and I've just mentioned in the last 30 years a couple of incidents, and there's many more that have happened. Some have become major stories, some became blips. And there were many that have been happened hundreds of years ago. There were lynchings. And there were, murders of African Americans by either angry mobs or, yes, even our police in some southern states. It goes back throughout history. And this is what my point is, that if we're really serious this time, and if you've been watching any of the footage of the riots and the mayhem and the looting and the violence and the criminal activity that and the fires and just the destruction, the lawlessness. And if it has bothered you and if it has cut to your core and it has scared you or it has angered you, it should do all of those things, then it also should inspire you to take a look at yourself. And what I believe needs to happen is that everyone in this country, past and present, certainly present, and certainly future, must realize that everyone is responsible for the current situation that we're in today. And it's not just the white population. It's also the African American population and the Hispanic population. It's everybody and the Asian population, whatever. This is the great melting pot. It is everybody in this country's fault. We have failed as a country, as a society. There's no question that the white population has been in power for the great majority of our country's history, and that there has been institutionalized racism in the law. There's no question about that. And the white population and the white power structure must take responsibility and blame for that. But I also believe that if we're going to be honest, and as I said, this is not pretty, this is the hard truth. I know it's difficult. I'm sure it's difficult for a doctor to sit down with a patient and tell them that they've got stage 4 cancer or stage 2 cancer or stage 3 cancer. That can't be an easy discussion, but it is a necessary discussion to recognize and acknowledge the cancer, because then we can move forward to a solution as to how we will fight it and hopefully rectify it. And that's what has to happen in this country with our racism and our prejudice. We all must come to the hard truth that we all, whites, African Americans, everyone, are to blame for this situation. And you say, well, geez, Jim, how are the African Americans? They don't, you know, the argument is that the white power structure has inflicted this. And I'm not denying that. But I've also, as I mentioned earlier, I also believe that same power structure has allowed African American voices to be heard. We have elevated African Americans into the highest offices that we have in this country throughout our government. We have elected a black president. We have African Americans on our Supreme Court. We have African American governors. We have African American mayors. We have African American police chiefs. So we have certainly tried. Have we succeeded? No. But the effort has been there. Whether the effort has been successful or truly embraced is a question. But have we all really worked for the justice and the equality that and the change that we are now calling for now? I could make the argument that in the black community, I know here in the Chicago area, the gang problem is on a weekly basis. On the weekends, sadly, we get these tolls of 10 to 15 people being killed and in the 20s and 30s of people getting shot on a regular basis. And the tagline on the news is, police ask, if you have any information about any of these shootings, please call the police. And most of these killings or these shootings are not solved. There is, and I'm not bringing something that is not known. There is a prevalent reality in the African, in many African American communities, that they, that people will not tell on gang members, whether it's out of fear or whether it's out of perhaps they know them or they're related. But there is a frustration that black on black crime has been allowed to fester because the black communities themselves have not helped police to solve these. And that goes back to the distrust of police. Although at, when there are problems, the police are called in. But I think we have to look, each of us, what, regardless of the color of your skin, I think we have to look in the mirror and ask, have we really done all we can personally to change this when confronted with an opportunity? But I also think collectively as a country, we also need to look at ourselves in the mirror and say, have we really dedicated ourselves to changing, whether it is the relationship between the police and the African-American community, whether it is the overall platitude of end racism or end prejudice? Have we really been honest with ourselves? Have we really admitted the roots of these problems in order to solve them? I don't think so. Because I believe if we got to the root of these problems, there would be a lot of criticism that others do not want to inflict on people. Very difficult conversations, just as difficult as the doctor telling the patient, you've got a tumor. But an admission or a conversation that is essential to solve this problem. Until we are honest enough and willing to bare our souls, no matter what color skin you are, and get to the roots of these problems, whatever we do will be lip service. We've seen it. We've seen it in the recent past. We've seen it in the long-term past. We have speeches and we have marches, and there are some changes are made, and then we get complacent because we haven't really been honest, brutally honest, at all of our faults, everybody's fault, everybody's blame, everybody's role in this problem. And it is not just one race or the other. It's the entire country. I said I was going to refer back to a podcast that I did earlier this year, or earlier in the history of this podcast. You remember the Colin Colin I can't even say his name. Colin Kaepernick? I'm sorry. I'm blanking now. Kaepernick. Kaepernick? Oh, jeez. Whoop. Kaepernick, I'm sorry. Colin Kaepernick situation back in 2016. I was very critical of his stance, not because of the issue he was trying to talk about. He was saying that he was going to take a knee during the national anthem until racial inequality and racism was abolished. My argument was that is a pie in the sky dream. that is a great goal, but it doesn't, it's not achievable. Let's talk about what is achievable. Let's get down to basics. Let's agree on what is wrong, and let's begin to devise a strategy, a real strategy, to fix it. And let's have realistic, specific goals in mind, not rhetorical platitudes of end racism. It's a nice slogan, but it's too big. The only way you're going to affect real change is to make realistic goals. And as I said before, be honest in the problems in each of those goals, and then create solutions that address the faults and the real problems, as hard as they are to admit. And then I believe we will start to see some real change. We haven't done that. We throw money at it. We hold hands. We hope for the best. Hope is not enough. We've kicked the can too much in this country. It's time to stop kicking the can, because we can't have this kind of reaction and this lawlessness in our country, and we shouldn't have a part of our citizenry feeling this kind of rage and this feeling of inequality and injustice. That's wrong. But the only way we're going to really solve it, or at least begin to tackle it, or really make some kind of progress, is we need to be completely honest with each other and with ourselves. And that is all people of all races taking responsibility. I'm not blaming anyone for this. I'm blaming everyone for it. And I'm calling not just on anyone to solve it, but I'm calling on everyone to solve it. To be honest with ourselves and with each other on the root problems, to air our dirty laundry, to accept some blame in this, as hard as it may be, as unjust as it may feel. We need to bare our souls here. That's the new normal. We need to bare our souls here, to be honest with ourselves, to be honest with each other, identify the root problems, and then devise strategies to solve those problems. That is how you change things. Optimism and hope are the emotional drivers, but honesty and realism is what makes change. We can do this if we want to, if we really want to, because if we just throw money at the problem, if we just give speeches, if we just throw rhetoric around, if we just have feel-good moments, in another 6 months or another 2 years, another incident will happen. And we sadly will see history repeat itself again. As I said before with Colin Kaepernick, I had no problem with his message. But I wish he would have said, I am going to take a knee until blank, blank, and blank happen. Real, attainable change or goals that could happen. But his goal was until racial justice is removed from the country. Okay, racial injustice has been with our country since its birth, over 250 years. So that's not a realistic goal. So that's why I felt that his protest wasn't going to really amount to anything, and it really hasn't. It was symbolic, but it basically ran him out of football. And while it's now being resurrected as a symbol because of taking the knee and the inhumane way that George Floyd was killed by someone kneeling on him, there's obviously a correlation there. But ultimately, those types of solutions or those kinds of goals, they're not realistic. Give me three or four real problems or real goals that we can realistically tackle and change. And when we get those done, then we move on to more. This cannot happen overnight. It cannot happen in a day. But it cannot happen until we look at it in a realistic way and realize, as we've been saying for the last 2 or 3 months about COVID, we are all in this together. And if anything, the George Floyd incident only reinforces that, hopefully, that we are all in this together, no matter what the color of your skin is. If we're really going to affect change, meaningful change, real change, long-lasting institutional change, we all must work together. We all must admit our blame in this. We all must admit our faults and our shortcomings. And only through that can we then get to the root of our problems and begin to create strategies and implementations to affect real institutional long-lasting change. I think we can do it. We've put a man on the moon. Ironically, we put a man into space right in the middle of all this. When we set our minds to it, the American spirit and the American drive and the American lust for freedom and fairness can overcome. But we have to be dedicated to it, all of us. We are all in this together. And so ends another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Every Monday, a new episode is posted at WGNradio.com or at any digital platform that you find your favorite podcast. We are there. So don't forget to subscribe to that platform, rate this podcast, and most importantly, tell your friends that your favorite podcast is Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Thank you so much for your loyalty and your devotion. Hope you enjoyed episode 2011. I'm Jim Tirano. I ain't here on business. I'm only here for fun. You've been listening to Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, from the end of the web to your screen. We can change the world. Let's start with ourselves.